This clip was recorded for the UK Wine Show. For more information about the UK Wine Show, you can go to ukwineshow.co.uk. Hi, my name's Chris Scott and I'm here with Chrissa Georgia. How are you, Chrissa?
Hi, Chris. Nice to be here.
You are a director of TV programmes. You also have recently finished your WSD Level 3 and you very kindly made some very nice things about our lovely materials.
Truly, Chris, they have guided me through really dark times.
In the wine in the dark sea times.
In the wine in the dark sea times, yes.
What we want to talk about today isn't how wonderful our materials are and our podcast, our Level 3 podcast. We want to talk about the documentary you created called In the Wine Dark Sea, which is a focus on Crete wines.
Exactly.
What we're going to do is we'll explore why you created it and a little bit about what you explored in that. But before we get into that, what's your background in producing TV? Have you? Because it was very nicely done.
Thank you. I used to be a journalist for different mediums, newspapers, and I was also a radio producer as well. I had two shows in Greece. I'm originally from Greece, but right now I live in the United States.
You don't have that classic Greek accent.
I have tried to let it go, but in the past years, people tell me that it's nice to have a little bit of accent, so... Mm. Yeah, it is what it is.
Yeah, I like to consider myself an international man of mystery with my accent.
Oh, hello, Mr. Bond.
Exactly. Not quite. Anyway, you're saying, so your background's radio and website news sites.
As a journalist, so I knew how to tell a story. I have also a background. My work before the documentary filmmaking was in marketing. So I know how to present an idea or in this case, a region. But it wasn't until I started studying as a hobby, studying wine with the WSET organization, that I realized that Crete is not mentioned in the Greece section in the books. Crete is not being mentioned.
Are you from Crete?
Yes, born and raised. So I took it a little personally, if you want to say that. And I started asking around people that I respect in the wine world, why isn't Crete included? It's the second largest wine producing area of Greece. And I got some really negative responses regarding the quality of the wines. And that really made me wonder because I had been in the different wineries as a wine tourist. Mm, mm. And I was astonished by the quality I saw. So I wanted to change that perception about the quality of the wines of Crete. And I thought, because I'm a documentary nerd, I thought, well, how about making a documentary about the wines of Crete? And I took a camera. I took a course on how to use the camera.
Oh, did you film it yourself? Because it's very nicely done.
I had a director of photography in Greece, so she knew what she was doing. I was directing mainly and following through with the storyline I had in mind. So yeah, that's how it happened in the first year of the pandemic.
Oh, okay. Yeah, okay. That'd be why there was no huge crowds in the video.
Exactly, yes.
Okay. We're going to talk about Crete in a minute, but one of the things I found a little bit weird is that you've published your documentary in the Wine Dark Sea. A quote from Homer's Odyssey, I understand.
Very good, yes.
Well, it's the opening thing on the video. So
That's what Homer said the first time he saw Crete. And I spent so many hours trying to capture what he saw. I was thinking maybe he saw as the sun was going down, it was reflecting on the sea and it was a little bit like purple. And I was thinking, oh, maybe the wine that we have in Crete, Mandilari, that is deep, deep purple, can probably be his reference. And then I read that ancient Greeks, most of them were colorblind. So,
really? I did not know that.
So I don't know if that was his reference for the color red or he was truly colorblind, but we'll never know, I guess.
Yeah.
But we got the name. Got the name. Wine Dark Sea.
And it's a good name. It's a good name. And the other thing is you've published it on Amazon Prime. For me, it was £3.49 to rent for a couple of days or £7 something to buy on Amazon Prime. But that's a strange platform to put it on. Why did you go for that platform per se?
So after the documentary was done, picture locked, I started sharing it, sending it to different film festivals. Mm-hmm. Through the film festivals, there was a agent who saw it and decided to reach out to me to represent it. And then he took the film and he's the one who is managing the distribution of it. So that's how it happened. It wasn't really a choice. And, you know, because Amazon is very flexible with the rights, we decided, let's start with this and see how it goes. Hopefully we'll have enough reviews for Amazon included into their library of movies. It has to have enough reviews. So hopefully we're going to get there very soon.
How many reviews do you need?
I think we have 3 and we need 7 to 10.
10. Okay, guys, have a listen to it and In the Wine Dark Sea and write a review. Okay, how's that? We'll see
Thank
if we
you,
get
Chris.
You to hear 10. I'm sure we'll get to 10. Okay,
you,
that's
Chris.
Fine. I'll even write one for you. How's that sound?
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Before Prime picked up the documentary, who do you think was your target audience? Because it's a little bit geeky for your average mum and pop.
I really had wine students in mind when I made this documentary. It was quite selfish, really, because I thought I will make a documentary that I, as a wine student, would watch. Mm-hmm. Not just necessarily to pass a test, but to enrich my wine knowledge in general.
Yeah.
So that's why the Wine Dark Sea became a documentary and not a promotional movie about Crete.
I suppose that's quite good as well, because if you've got good wine knowledge, Crete is a unique example, and some of the people you interviewed had very good knowledge, and it's another example of taking your core wine knowledge and applying it to a new place that you may not know much about. I found yes. I could understand what was going on quite well, but, you know, I'm a bit of a wine geek, so.
Nice. What surprised me really is that in taking this documentary to different film festivals, it got all these awards, and I really was surprised because I truly made a geeky documentary about the wines of Crete. Mm. Lots of information, really deep into the varieties, and that was unexpected.
So that's sort of the story about how it was created. And it is very nicely put together. You know, I appreciate cinematography. I have no skills in creating it, which is why I do a podcast. But let's talk a wee bit about Crete.
So Crete is a long island. Mm. From east to west is about 160 miles. Do we count in miles or kilometers here?
I prefer kilometers, but we're in the UK, so miles, and you're in the US, so it's miles. So it's about 200K.
So that's about 250 kilometers.
Yep.
And it has, in the middle, it has a spine of mountains that can go up to 2,400 meters of elevation.
Oh, that's high.
That's about 7,000 feet, if I'm not mistaken. Okay. Something like that.
Yep.
And Crete is the same distance from the mainland Greece as it is from Africa. So it's right there in the Mediterranean Sea. It has really peculiar climate because of that. When we think of Crete, we think of sun, we think of nice sandy beach, and hot climate. It's a hot Mediterranean climate, so no one would imagine that anyone can produce quality wines there. But because of the high elevation of the mountains, the wine growers are taking advantage of that. And planting in higher elevation helps them accomplish high acidity and the fruit forward, to keep the freshness of the fruit in the wines. Mm-hmm. So we have the north side. It can be 2 to 3 degrees cooler than the south side. So the south side is exposed to the Saharan desert, all the winds that blow from Africa. And because of that, Crete is growing 1 centimeter per year because of that. It's
because of the sand.
We're talking about that amount of sand traveling from Africa.
Because we get sand dumps here and it covers all our cars. About once every couple of years, you'll see, they'll talk about a Saharan sand wind coming up and everything gets covered in just a very thin layer of dust. Is that what happens in Crete quite a bit?
Yes, and very often, especially because of the proximity to Africa.
Yeah, yeah. And you got to be really careful with it because it scratches the bejeebus out of your car if you just wash it. So in Crete, does no one have shiny cars or something? It's all dull.
Exactly, yes.
Okay. And then the weather facing north, which is a little bit unusual because they did talk about being north-facing being quite popular. And normally when you think of vineyards, you're thinking, oh, you'll be facing towards the equator because that's where the heat is. But I noticed in places like Portugal, sometimes some of the grape varieties are grown on north-facing slopes, particularly if the warmer ones face the south, the grape varieties like the cooler climates face the north. And I presume that's a similar sort of thing with you guys, is it?
Exactly. And that's why most of the producers, when they want to create quality wine, and of course their vineyard allows for that, they prefer the north-facing slopes.
Yep. You don't get a lot of quality wine on the south-facing slopes onto the Sahara Desert.
Not really. But there are some locations that produce great wine. In the center of Crete, there is a town called Rethymno. And if you go up in the mountain towards the south, we have a producer that makes amazing Vidiano. Vidiano is one white grape variety.
Yep.
And it's growing in popularity, not just for Greece, but because many, many wine regions are dealing with climate change. Vidiano is a grape variety that is drought and heat resistant. So it's something that is being explored in other areas of the world as well.
Okay, then I think what we're going to do, Krissa, is we'll wrap it up there. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you so much for having me, Chris.